Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Well, it was August last year when we actually spoke, yes, in 2022, to the awesome creators of the whole Enigma book series. That was Charles Brakefield and Roxanne Berkey. Friday, August the 5th, 2022, to be precise. But time is just an illusion, as Einstein would say. And lo and behold, as if by magic, we've got at least one of those authors back with us today, because there's more fabulous stuff coming through. It is indeed the tech expert and indeed thriller book writer extraordinaire, Charles Brakefield. How are you, Charles?
Alex, I'm doing good. And Kathy, thanks for joining us. We had heard that you might not make it, but always pleased to have you aboard, ma'am.
Thank you for having me. Love being here.
It's critical to actually get both Texas and Florida balanced out on these kind of things, because otherwise, you know, there's all sorts of issues could be there. And before we start talking books, Charles, I've got to actually discuss current events. Specifically, what's been happening with respect to the TikTok soul, Mr. Xu Chu, who has basically been facing 4.5 hours of questioning at a U.S. congressional hearing, obviously with the possibility, emphasize just the possibility, that TikTok might be actually booted out of the United States. Your thoughts on this, Charles, or is it just a case of whatever?
Well, some of the backstory on that is apparently that there's some question about where the information they gather goes. And so there's some uncomfortable questions that don't quite get answered to everybody's satisfaction. I guess is the political way to be able to put it. And the first option was, well, go ahead and divest yourself from the mainland China. Have them spin you off, and has it as a full U.S. company. And so that seems to have had some traction, except that one thing, the Chinese government said, no, you can't do that because we have jurisdiction here. So it's going to be a tug of war, and there are rumblings of, well, we'll just outlaw it and get rid of it. I'm not quite sure I subscribe to that either. But at the same time, there are ethical issues that don't seem to be addressed currently with their current architecture from ByteDance.
I mean, I'm just thinking maybe TikTok needs to be compliant, or at least hire Philip Pliant if they want to do this. See what I did there in terms of the sort of line from that? Philip Pliant, of course, being your creation, the wealthy opportunist plastics dealer, chief executive officer of Pliant Industries, as well as being a master thief. So at the heart, obviously, of Enigma Tracer, and I must admit, I'm really impressed with the quote from Gandhi that you actually introduce with respect to at least one of the video trailers for this on YouTube, which is there's enough on the planet to satisfy everybody's needs, but not to satisfy everybody's greeds, which I thought was a nice touch, a sort of variation on that. So was this all part of the philosophy that I know when we last spoke, you're very keen on saying the threat of the corporations, the threat of the technology, the abandonment of human beings. I won't ask you, were you tempted yourself and Roxy to use ChatGPT bot or a chatbot to actually write the entire book? Because clearly I would have been off the record. But actually, were you?
Oh, well, if I could give you full disclosure on that, well, we actually got a review back on Enigma Tracer. And you know it's going to be released at the end of this month. Right now it's on pre-order for 99 cents on Amazon in Amazon UK, Germany, Spain, you know, all the usual markets that we go into. But this review shot back to us, and it started off like, these are amazing, award-winning people. You know, I want to have your child. You know, all that kind of stuff, and I started looking at it, and I went, as I got down farther into it, what they had done was they had actually pulled in stuff from the other series. Characters who are not in the book. And then a little more detail, I'm like, OMG. They basically spun this up using a chat, GPT, chatbot, said, "Here, build me a nice review, give me about 700 words, and make sure that my name goes on it. Have a nice day." They sent it back to us. I caught it, and so did Roxanne almost right away. Furious, we sent it back to them saying, "I'm sorry, we're not interested in having reviews done by your chatbots." And at first, they said, "Well, we all right, you can't. I mean, this is after the synopsis that I had given them that said, here's all the neat stuff that this book's going to be about. What's your review?" Misinformation, incorrect statements, wrong characters. We were, as they say in Texas, spitting mad. Okay, and so we fired it back to them and said, nope. Go fix this, or make sure you never darken our doors again." Well, that got around pretty quickly from the publicist that plugged us in, Mr. Mickey Mickelson, that I'm sure you're used to dealing with,
We love Mickey. He's been on the show. We like him.
And he said, "Huh? How did you see this? This is what I do for a living. I eat technology for breakfast." So he said, "Okay, I've got eight people reviews, and they all started saying the same thing. This doesn't match. This isn't right. This is bogus." And so the owner of the this review firm went to the reviewer and said, "What did you do?" And he goes, "Nothing. I didn't do nothing. Nothing." So he said, "Okay, well, let me fix this. You're fired." And they begged for another chance to come back at us because we didn't know. We didn't know we were being deceived, and we're actually glad you caught it. So that's really at the heart of the technology that that we see on a regular basis, and it's becoming more and more difficult. What's real? What's accurate? What is made up? And the horrifying question is, can you tell the difference?
Well,
Because if
that
you
Turing
can't.
test has a lot to answer for, clearly, in terms of robotics. I can pretty much confirm, though, that Charles, Kathy, and myself are indeed real. I know I might appear like a virtual character, but I am actually physically real.
I was gonna ask you for that. We've actually gotten to the end of a lot of these reviews, and we basically said, and full disclosure here, we're not a chatbot, we're not a deep fake. We are, Charles and Rox, on the show here. If you want to pick up the phone, call me. I'll be happy to answer to you, to the tune of we be us. So there it is.
Okay, let's turn to Kathy. I mean, clearly, the educational world is still in a state of we don't quite know where we're going with respect to chatbots and so on. There are certain exam boards who say, yes, welcome them on board, just as calculators were welcomed on board years ago. But over to you in terms of what line you'd like to take vis-a-vis enigmas, or indeed, I mean, there's so much. I mean, we could talk about Thiers, Tiers, or Cheers, another text which is co-authored by Charles and Roxy. But maybe we'll focus on Enigma Tracer. Anyway, Kathy, over to you.
So many opportunities, and if you need me to, Charles, you can show me a variety of pictures with traffic lights, and I can identify them for you to prove my authenticity and not a robot.
Okay. All right. That's a good to know. Good feedback. Good feedback.
Well, my question for you, because I mean, obviously, timing. Last time we talked too, I think the timing was also in your favor because there's always news about technology and the mischief that it can be up to. Because technology is both can be used for good and can be used for dubious, instruction. But I wanted to ask for the inspiration for your current book. This is a it's a plot that we've seen historically almost. I mean, we if we're talking about something a little bit more modern. We've seen this with factories in Mexico that have been closed down in order to start manufacturing in the United States. And that's also created quite a lot of conflict. So I wanted to ask where your inspiration for this plot has come from, or is this like a collaboration of ideas?
We always collaborate, Rox and I, and sometimes we get on these binges of well, what if we had this cyber this bad guy who's masquerading as a Here's somebody who's helping the environment. Here's somebody who's doing swell stuff. And when you peel back the covers a little bit, you're like, oh my, he's cheating. He's dumping. He's claiming that this is he's the the high and the high moral ground when in fact he's throwing people under the bus, and he's backdooring deals with people that think that he's playing fair. And so it's a I wouldn't say it was a terribly original idea, because we have so many examples where, no, here it is again, doggone it, we got this cyber slug. What's a little more different about it is that the technology. He's instead of the go do it yourself, let me send Guido to rough you up. Although he does that in the book too, but the technology of and the brokering of his bad attitudes and his this you can't catch me approach to I can do whatever I want, because I know how to be able to use the technology to my advantage and your disadvantage. And so that's where the we like to plunge into and say, okay, show me what you got, because the bad guys, just so you know, are always ahead of the good guys. And it sounds counterintuitive, but and it's really unfair, because it's like, all right, here you are minding your own business, running a shop, someplace, and next thing you know, all of the terminals have been seized by a ransomware, and you can't pump fuel, natural gas, nothing along the whole eastern seaboard of the United States. And that's where they that's where some of that stuff comes into play. And what they want, they want rent, it's a ransomware demand. I want this. Oh, and by the way, and give it to me in what I think is untraceable bitcoins, so I can cash it in through the Russian money laundering industry that they've really kind of perfected. Those are the things we, okay, how do you stop this? This is what they're doing. This is their business mantra. And how do you intercept it if you're the good guys? Because you're playing catch up, and so you have to have a break now and again. That's where the drama and the tension comes from.
Oh man. I mean, and now just to kind of to bridge the gap between fiction and fact, I guess, to kind of reflect back on Alex's first question with you, with what's happening with the hearings and TikTok, do you think it's being used as a distraction over other dubious advances in technology?
I don't really want to comment on all the ugly details that I've picked up. I will freely admit, when I was at Nortel Networks in the late 2000s, early 2000s, and late 2000s, we saw our technology pop up with a different logo on it in China. We saw intellectual property going out the door. We saw all the unfortunate things of, well, we thought we were partners, and it's like, well, that old adage of what's yours is ours, and what's mine is mine. And I saw that that company fall victim and basically implode. I'm okay, I admit it, I'm somewhat bitter about the way that the intellectual property was pirated. And then I started seeing other companies losing intellectual property, and I've seen authors have their stuff. You may find this incredible, but they've bought copies, or they bought the digital right. They got hold of the digital rights in China, because that's where it's printed, and they just put a different author on it and market it in their own arena. And then, that one was in particular, the author got an award that they didn't know that they'd sold that many books in China, until somebody pointed out, well, they pirated her work. So to your question, what about TikTok doing that? It's I'm not the forensic expert to be able to go through and say, okay, right here, here's where the bits that they're sending to, that it's the you have motive, you have opportunity, and you have the technology. And unless somebody, the good guys, say, no, No, you're not exporting all of our information. The EU has already said, has already started comparing their stuff against the United States and saying, how come they're exporting different stuff than you guys are? How come we're getting different video feeds? How come I'm, it's looking more and more like they're, it's a targeted attack based on cultural norms?
Still, the good news is at least there are nice relationships between President Xi and Vladimir Putin. So that'll mean that there's another market for the Chinese intellectual property to go to, which is nice.
As far as I'm concerned, they hope they get all they deserve from each other.
There you go. Let's progress on to the fictional world. Although probably one might say it's in a hyper-reality world, it will be actually happening. When I was reading about Philip Pliant, one person sprung to mind, and I'm not sure whether he was somebody that you might have thought about, but that is Elon Musk, and especially with respect to his dealings with respect to Twitter and so on. Or did you have, was it a kind of combination of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, I don't know, Boris Johnson and Donald Trump you were trying to wrap into this place here?
There's a little bit of that in the back of your mind, I should think. We were looking for fresh villains. It's so hard to come up with good villains. I mean, I'm petitioning people all the time. I need a new evil genius. Alex, now that I think about it, do you have a resume? I need somebody for
A billion
the
pounds? Just
Another
listen to our
another
Wednesday shows. It'll inspire.
An evil genius, and of course I will need references. Just
I
so you
can give
know.
you some good dolphins who'd be very much on my side.
Okay, all right. No, but the concepts are like, there's some bad attributes. There's some they have this personality flaw. They have and you see this probably depicted. The media loves to be able to exploit that, so it's not hard to be able to pick that up. I try not to pattern after. We try not to pattern after somebody that's rich and famous because usually what they do is they get really upset and then they want to come talk to you. So we try to have some plausible deniability. I guess is probably the way to be able to put it. But in truth, some of the bad guys we have had are actual people that we've grown to hate and over the years that we personally had to endure. And that was the whole attraction for going into fiction because Roxanne petitioned me and said, okay, instead of the tech manuals, let's go do fiction. We'll bake in the tech facts and we'll write fiction. How about that? I said, well, I don't know. I think we'll be able to quack people if we do that and not go to jail. And I went, boy, that's a hard sell there, huh? Yeah, so I bought it, and we've, it's most gratifying to being able to be able to exercise the good, the bad, the uglies, and let the justice triumph, but only after a monumental struggle.
Can I ask again, did you have a fascination or is there a blood relative connection with respect to obviously the country of my father's birth? That's Poland, because I do notice there's a kind of slight a line that comes through that. And obviously, there was a novella that you put together, which is out of Poland. Was that something which, again, comes from your own particular background? Or is it just a case of, well, Poland's quite a nice place, really? It's, smashed between Germany and Russia. So it kind of is a lose-lose scenario.
That's a good question, Alex. We when we wrote the Enigma series, the first 12 books, about book 10, book 11, somebody said, these guys are all present day. Where in the heck did they come from? Where do you get to have this kind of moral fiber and this indignant outrage about the bad guys whacking people digitally, and they take up the gauntlet and they'll fight? And I said, well, let's go back to the beginning. And the beginning begins with the German invasion of Poland in 1939. And so what happens there is that in 30 days, Germany overruns Poland just that quick. We took that particular story because it had one key ingredient that we wanted to be able to pull through all the series, and that's the Enigma machine. So in 1939, the war looks like it's lost from the Polish side, but they want to hit back. And so the idea hits three young men that said, let's seize their encryption device, the Enigma machine, used for being able to encode battle plans, directions to, on the field, correspondence with the ambassadors, blah blah blah, and we'll go ahead and broker it to the Allies so they can start figuring out how the bad guys are communicating and intercept them. Oh, and by the way, let's make a copy for us, because this won't be the only time that and the only place that you'll have to fight the bad guys. And it is the beginning of the computer age. It basically spawns the thought processes, the okay, how do you do this faster? How do you do this from a human computer to a digital computer? And the concept is still the same. You still use encryption on your voice path when you're talking on cell phone. So it is the technology that came to the present day to help underwrite and drive the ambitions and the goals of the R Group and the Enigma series. But that's where it started from. That's the that's we postulated that that's exactly what happened. It's actually deeper than that, further research, but it's that's why.
I mean, you could have gone back to Charles Babbage and Ada Lovelace, I suppose, but maybe that's a bit too kind of enigmatic even for the general listener, but what the hey.
Yeah, you can go back, all the way back to the Abacus if you want. I mean, okay, here's a way to be able to, they were doing that manually. Okay, all right. I can do it faster digitally. That takes us a long ways back, and that's probably a little bit more genealogy than what we wanted to cover.
Kathy, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about your main characters, I guess, is Gracie and Bailey as they're uncovering. And you do such a great balance where they are obviously we kind of refer to them as the good guys, the detectives in a sense of the story, but they aren't perfect. You know, they're not like grossly sweet in this way that you kind of expect a character. So I kind of wanted to ask, how do you create these well-balanced characters?
And that's probably the secret sauce, Kathy, that that Rox and I have generated. You don't want perfect characters. Nobody wants a perfect. You need to see the personality flaws, the character traits that are like that's not a real nice attribute for a young lady being able to flatten somebody with a spin kick. But at the same time, we don't want to see just that's too easy. It's never that easy, I can imagine probably you from your inquisitive angelic look to going from to a let me get something heavy and hit you with this because you're in my space and you're threatening my child. I can see you having that kind of overlap in your character that's I doesn't always show up. But they're lurking there, and so it takes just a little bit of finesse to be able to bring that out, and it helps give you that extra depth on the characters.
I mean, you're not wrong. I do weight lift 3 times a week and I box. So the skills
Good to know. All
are
right.
there.
Now you don't do that kickboxing thing where you get in the ring and and you guys are really going at it with the not only your fists but also your hand your feet, right? I mean, is that what I'm hearing? I mean,
Oh, no. I do like Thai boxing, though, where it's elbows and knees. Big fan,
all right, good to know. I'll try not to tick you off, so.
No, I mean, again, with personalities, it's like you said, angelic, sweet. Can't really piss me off too often.
Well, and
So.
those are the things where you get to exercise the characters and how do they, okay, now here's stress. Here's the here's the things that they didn't expect. How are they going to react? And maybe they run, they flee, or they turn and I'm going to fight you. I'm not giving up. And so those are the things that and you'll find this, you may find this amusing, but this is the things the characters actually teach us as writers. We can be writing along. Okay, I'm going to do this, and all of a sudden the character says, no, I want to help this person. I'm not going to back away. I'm not going to back down. I can't, you can't let me do that. I won't let you let me do that. And so, like, huh. And all of a sudden you're in their mindset, and then the character starts dictating to you, and you start seeing, oh, here's the things that I hadn't thought of. Here's the things they're capable of doing. And with just a little more push from the bad guy, we can see that, tectonic shift all of a sudden. And now here's a roaring warrior that can't be stopped. And that's those are the things that we find very gratifying, and so do the readers.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you said it perfectly, where it's kind of the characters are teaching you, because I think human nature, we don't actually know how we're going to react until the situation's upon us. And your characters have to deal with the situation that's upon them.
Precisely, and sometimes that makes for some, it's not uncommon for us to say, okay, scrub the last five chapters, the next five chapters, because we're, the character just told me we have to change it. Okay, so it's that it makes for a terrific story, and also we get the comments back like, I'd have never thought of that. I never would have thought. Well, the character's what taught me, said this is what we need to go do.
And I also wanted to ask in the more larger picture, because we've reflected how your stories are, your books, your series are so close to things that happen in real life. And I just kind of was curious, has anyone ever reached out to you asking about the if this is true or factual, or has
Oh
anyone
yeah.
come up with their own conspiracy theories?
Oh yeah. I mean, a couple of times we've had people say, this can't be real. And that just really frosts my cookies when I hear that, because it's like, oh yeah, okay, here, let me send you the details on where it's actually published in these tech manuals, and this is what I teach to the junior engineers. I'm like, well, let me go change my passwords right now. Now I'll talk to you later. Something, and I've had a couple of people say, "Is this true? Because if it is, it's terrifying." And I said, "I wouldn't hide under my bed, but at the same time, take my advice. Download some of the freebies we have on our website at enigmaseries.com. It says change your password to a past phrase. Here's the things that you don't do. Don't click on these buttons with the other time where somebody says, OMG, your account's going to be disabled, and you won't be able to get in your bank account. That's just the kind of con game that people fall for. And we've got the just free downloads for, be careful of this, watch out for thus and such. And so, we try to help educate, because it's we feel it's important to give back to the community.
So I take my monthly cyberfish training very seriously as a member of staff at the University of Lincoln, where we have to work through that. Still a standard to find that one of the most popular passwords is indeed password, followed by password one, password two, and password three.
Just not to put too fine a point on it, I used to have to do de desktop support in my youth. I don't have to do that anymore. But we'd go to somebody's desk, and they say, "Oh my God, they got the desktop locked. How are we supposed to upgrade it?" I pick up the keyboard, and here's the sticky note underneath it with the password on it. I said, "Use this." Writing down the password and putting on the key underneath the keyboard and hoping that nobody will get to it. What was the point of trying to be secure, guys? But people do that all the time. They just we were at a trade show, and this young lady came by with a $1,000 Apple phone. Yeah, just chatting away, having a good time. Bought a book from us like that. Put her phone down, completely distracted, walked away. And I went, whose phone is this? And we pick it up, and the guy next to me goes, we'll see if you can get into it. So I punch it in, and it's no password, no password, no biometrics, nothing. And so I'm like, oh, this is cool. And so we're taking selfies with her phone for like 15, 20 minutes, having a good time with it. And we hear this the phone chirped and with a shriek across the room. And it's like, this is a fair-sized assembly room, so she was really shouting and running. Here you see this frantic young female running from table to table. Did you see my phone? Did you see my phone? Finally getting her, said, what'd your phone look like? Well, it's a black. Okay, all right, that helped a lot. Does it look like this? And she went, you found my phone, And then we both, Rox and I both came down on her, like we had to play the parent card. I admit it. He goes, honey, put a password on this, use your biometrics, and don't leave your stuff laying around because you're not always going to get your phone back so easily. She was scarlet. And of course, now, if you want to make it up to us for holding on to your phone for you, you could buy another book. So there was that mercenary side of me that I, you know, I, all right, I could have left that out, but well, there it is.
Not just a fine author, but also a concerned citizen as well, which is always good. EnigmaBookSeries.com, of course, is the place to go to not only actually enter to win Amazon gift cards, it would seem, but also have a whole range of other factors within that, including many of the other fantastic novels and novellas that Brakefield and Burkey have produced. We've just sadly just had Charles Brakefield today, but that's okay. Roxy Burkey is out there doing sort of wonderful things. Hopefully she'll rejoin us. And I know it was Chloe Rose who actually asked you the last two questions where we wrapped up the previous interview back in August 2022. So I'll tell you what, Kathy, would you like to ask the first one? And I'll ask the second. Kathy.
Sure. All right. So, Charles, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Recently, interview today? Is that what your question? Oh.
Yeah. A reasonably interesting Zoomer.
I know sometimes getting from Florida to Texas you can lose a lot of the translation in terms of that, but generally, have you enjoyed the show?
Okay. I enjoy talking to people who are interesting. You guys are you ask insightful questions. We have a dialogue. It's not just, all right, question number three. You're engaging, and that's important because it's fun. It's more fun to talk to somebody if they're interested. And it also kind of reinforces the fact that I think I'm wonderful, but you might even like me a little bit too. So that's important because Roxanne depends upon that collateral as well for her mental well-being. So yes, we've
Well,
enjoyed the
that
show
leads
so
me
far.
into not question number three, but question number two, as it
Okay.
says here. And that is basically, can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you come back, Charles?
We would love to be able to come back. I'd like to bring Madame Berkey with me because she always has the perspective that sometimes being a Texas male, I don't always project properly. I freely admit that that's not my orientation, but I do try to represent her by proxy. So smiling and cutting up with both of you has been. I've been a delight. And so, yes, very much would
Well,
like to come back again, please.
duly reciprocated across the Atlantic. Up next, we've got gardener and horticulturalist David Dominy talking about why we should all be growing material, and indeed why a third of British people believe that in the event of an extreme scenario, they could actually sustain themselves by growing their own food. It's up next. Charles Brakefield, take care, be well, be safe, cyber safe, obviously, and keep
Yes.
writing.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Kathy.
Strawberries, tomatoes, potatoes, and lettuce. No, not members of the current government, although you might think so. But actually, according to Miracle-Gro, I should say, the four most popular things we like to grow. And indeed, who better to turn to when we are dealing with matters horticultural than chartered horticulturist and indeed TV garden extraordinaire? It's a hearty welcome to David Dominy. How are you, David?
Very good. Thank you very much this morning. A little bit of sun in the sky. It makes you feel as if you want to get outside and start growing and engaging with nature again after being inside for a cold winter.
Absolutely. Now, I was talking to some of my students a few weeks ago, actually, apropos your passion, and I know it is a passion for getting people to grow their own vegetables, grow their own food, etc. And what I get was a range of people said, well,
Yeah, possibly student accommodation. We can't really do that. And maybe our parents used to grow this, et cetera, et cetera. So clearly this survey by Miracle Grow has a lot of resonance in terms of people want to grow their own food. So what's stopping them?
Well, in fact, if anything, there's a younger generation engaging in growing in a variety of different ways. We've seen a huge surge in just windowsill houseplants being grown, certainly in student digs and accommodation. And in many cases, it's the first opportunity for youngsters, if they are staying in student accommodation, to personalise their own room. The growth of sales and rubber plants and cheese plants and the like. But the fact that they can grow stuff on their own windowsills for production, whether it's herbs or cress or a variety of things, it's really the beginning of a journey. Because that the thought of growing things like your own potatoes or growing raspberries and strawberries, which we all love, it becomes a habit. And that interaction with nature is incredibly important for mind and body, especially if you're spending a lot of time working or studying. That concentration onto a screen, whether it's a phone or whether it's a tablet, a computer or the like, having natural green breaks to tend and care for things has been proven to have a huge restorative effect on our minds. It increases our memory capacity and it refreshes the brain to absorb more information. So gardening and engaging with any form of nature, with the sound of the birds outside in the garden, whether it's the warmth of the sun on the face or it's the scent of honeysuckle, or even the sound of the first bumblebee, all of those things play a positive part in our mental. And of course, if you're eating the produce you're doing, your physical well-being as well.
Now, you've also put together five top tips, David, in terms of ways to maybe start taking those initial steps to get the spade out or equivalent digging device and seeds and such like. And I see it starts with the right plant at the right place.
Oh, it does. And listen, I'd start even more than that. Wherever you are, you're sitting down having a cup of coffee, a beer at the end of the day, just write down the things you like to eat. You know, if you like new potatoes or chips and potatoes on your list, if you like strawberries, list down the things that you eat down on a piece of paper. And many of it engages on nutrition as well. Blueberries are incredibly nutritious, one of the superfoods to have. So list down what you like. That's the best thing. And I usually find that it's nice. It's like choosing a holiday. You know what I mean? You write all your destinations down and it whets your palate for more. So write down the things you like to eat. The next thing is to identify what space you've got. Have you got an area that you can grow your own? If not, what else have you got? If you've got a border outside a flat or a house, you can actually grow things like currants and gooseberries and things like that in the border with other ornamental plants. If you haven't even got that, then certainly you can just grow things in grow bags. In fact, Miracle-Gro do this veg planter, which is like a super grow bag. It's thicker and longer. And you can grow a whole host. You can grow a herb garden in that, tomatoes, chilies, you know, strawberries, just from that veg planter. And the next thing is if you are planting in containers, get yourself a good quality, and it's everything's peat-free now, get yourself a good quality peat-free compost to grow up and plant them in. And the other thing to remember is, of course, is sometimes you're away on holiday. So make sure you've got someone who can tend your plants just while you're away for that time. And feed. The secret is boosting food into anything. It's just like us. We grow better. We're healthier if we've got sufficient nutrients around. And there's a lot of different fruit and veg organic compost that you organic fertilizer that you can do. Miracle-Gro does loads, and that really does give the plants a boost, and that way you're harvesting. But it's not just the eating, it's the process of instilling curiosity, seeing things grow in front of you, and that type of magical engagement that does a great deal to nourish the heart and the soul.
I mean, obviously, one caveat would probably be if you like eating pork, lamb or a chicken, perhaps they aren't best actually added to your list of things to grow. So stick to a vegan and healthy alternative would be the advice if you're growing your own particular material. But this survey, again, just briefly returning back to it, David, I was surprised at how many of us actually believe that we could be self-sufficient if they had to, or if we had to. I mean, a third of British folk believe they could be self-sufficient if we had to. I don't know. I'm not sure whether I'm sort of as optimistic about that. What about yourself? Do you think it's, I mean, obviously you could, but do you think that's a fair reflection of people at present?
The funny thing is you start and fix it as you go. You start growing the things that you like, and then it grows itself. So if you're growing rhubarb, for instance, or asparagus, those crowns stay in the ground and every year get bigger and better. And there's less maintenance that you need to do it. So you don't have to worry too much about that. If you're growing things like fruit and apples and currants and raspberries and gooseberries and strawberries, they stay in the ground. So they're becoming and they're growing with you. It's a lot of things that you have to plant annually, things like carrots or beans or peas or onions and whatever like that. And you find it grows and slowly, without even realizing, you are becoming self-sufficient. And let me just say something more. It's not just about self-sufficiency. It's healthier. Because what you're growing, you're picking fresh, and the nutrients and vitamins are really there. You're also talking about being an enhanced flavor. There's the therapeutic and relaxation engagement with the plant, which makes you happier. There's an opportunity to do, and it's less plastic. It's saving the planet. You know, all of these aspects of us growing, and if all of us did it. And of course, it interacts with the nature that visits our gardens as well. It's an incredibly positive thing growing your own. And I think you just start by doing one or two things, and then it's like a hobby that grips you like no other. And, you know, many of the plants, I mean, the rhubarb I've had for 10 years. In fact, when I moved house, I dug it up and took the crowns with me. They're part of the family. It's that type of engagement that really works.
The sheer joy of vegetative reproduction. You can't beat it, clearly. Where can people find out more details about the Miracle Grow survey, David?
If they go to the website lovethegarden.com, that's lovethegarden.com, there's a whole host of information and how you can grow your own on a budget. And I think, are you growing anything yourself?
Do you know, I was afraid you'd ask me that. And the answer has to be, no, I haven't started as yet. But I think you're nudging me in that direction, David. Every time we speak, I'm just getting a little bit closer. So I'm sure I'll get there someday.
Just go out and buy a packet of basil seeds. Just a packet of basil seeds. It costs you a couple of quid. Just a bit of Miracle-Gro peat-free compost. Sprinkle a bit of seeds on there. Water them. And when they germinate, take about a week to germinate. You pot them up into little plants. Incredibly easy. And the fragrance and the flavour just on your windowsill, it's unbelievable. Just give it a go. Give it a grow.
Ooh, nice touch. David Dominey, TV gardener and chartered horticulturist, huge thanks. And keep on growing, David.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have a cost of living crisis. We have various other challenges. And yet it would seem that many people are actually spending over £4,000 a year on tasks that they regularly outsource to others. Clearly, we need to seek advice on this one. And who better to go to actually find some very sensible responses to this particular study by Capital One UK as part of their Consumer Skills Index than the fabulous Timmy Merriman-Johnson, also known as Mr. Money Jar. How are you, Timmy?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Great to connect with your good self. But talk to us a little bit about this finding on this study from Capital One, who really suggests that, you know, we're basically sort of spending over £4,000 on outsourcing jobs such as takeaways, beauty treatments, basic car maintenance and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've partnered with Capital One UK to help people become a bit more mindful about their day-to-day spending, because as you said, our researchers found that Brits spend more than £4,000 a year on tasks and services that they regularly outsource to others. Some of these things are, you know, the usual suspects: gym memberships at around £500 a year, household decorating at around £420, and takeaways at £375. So what we want to encourage people to do is to try and either learn a skill so that they can begin to do some of these things themselves, or to do things at home that they would normally outsource to someone else.
Now, one of the strategies that Capital One UK are actually launching to help with this, it's not so much pay-per-view, which we're probably all familiar with, but save-per-view. So again, share with us, why might SPV be the ideal way to actually have some of those wonderful tips put in action?
Well, yeah, Save Per View TV is essentially a content series that Capital One UK has launched on its website. And we've partnered with a group of savvy content creators to teach viewers skills that could help them to save them some money and learn something new in the process. So if people do a quick internet search for Capital One UK Save Per View TV, there'll be a range of videos that will show them how to do everything from at-home workouts to budgeting and cooking and so on.
As human beings, we tend to be inherently lazy. I mean, that's probably at the heart of saying, oh, I know I need to check the car tires, or I need to check the oil or various other bits, so I need to, I'll just hand that over to somebody else to actually do that. And obviously the whole notion of takeaway, which had a renaissance, I suppose, during the pandemic. That's another sort of way we're thinking, oh, I can't be bothered cooking from that point of view. Is it just a case of attitudes that are at the heart of this challenge?
Yeah, firstly, on that takeaway point during the pandemic, absolutely. I think I was 70% takeaway by the end of the lockdown period. Look, I'm not sure that people are lazy. I think we are genuinely living in tough economic times. And I think it's more efficiency. I think people recognize when they need to ask for help with something, when they need to hire someone, and when they can do something themselves. But this campaign is all about empowering people to pick one thing. Some of the things I've been doing is, at the gym membership for a while that I was paying for that I wasn't using, started to bring some of my my workouts in-house. Just pick up a really simple skill like cooking to reduce some of your expenses on takeaways. If you can cook, just carve out some time in your week to do some meal prep. These little small things do add up over time. So I wouldn't see it as laziness. I just think, people are time poor. People are busy.
We've just had Jeremy Hunt's budget, or relatively recently, and so on. Would you advise everybody actually needs to have a personal budget and actually look at their own finances on a fairly regular, almost quarterly basis?
Absolutely. Something that I have been doing during the cost of living crisis is having a set day of the week. So my day is a Sunday to do my budget. I used to budget on a monthly basis on or around the day that I got paid. But I found that particularly when prices increased, shortening that cycle down to a weekly budget, literally looking at the last 7 days of my spending and making a plan for the next 7 days of my spending, was a lot more manageable. And this is something that I would recommend to people to do. Find a day in your week to do it. Take yourself to a place, your happy place, whether it's a cafe or your favorite room in the house. Have a look at your past week of spending. Job's a good one.
Is it also important that when we look at the financial news, we kind of look for the positives? For instance, an interest rate rise might seem challenging at first, but actually it's pretty good news for savers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have the Bank of England due to make a decision today. And we're on 4% at the moment. And I think an increase of 4.25 or 4.5% is expected. But the bank has also said that we're nearing, the end of the interest rate rises. And as we heard from Jeremy Hunt last week, inflation has been forecasted by the OBR to fall to 2.9% by the end of the year, which is about the level that we want it to be anyway. So I've actually been reducing my news intake. I do it sparingly. And I think that if you are going to be reading the news, then do stick to the positives if you can.
Very good. A life tip as well as a financial one, which is very good. CapitalOne.co.uk/saveperviewTV. Would that be the best channel to go to find out more details about some of the things we've spoken about today?
Yes. Or you can do just a simple internet search. Capital One UK, Save Per View TV, and there'll be loads of fun content for the viewers.
And in terms of finding your own podcasts and indeed advice vis-a-vis your superheroic alter ego, Mr. Money Jar, where can people find you, Timmy?
I'm extremely flattered that you just referred to Mr. Money Jar as a superhero. That's actually something that I'm trying to build, so thank you. I'm on social media at Mr. Money Jar, wherever you get your social media, so do come say hi.
Fantastic. Timmy Merriman-Johnson, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and keep on saving money.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, coming to financial matters, and clearly we need to seek advice from professionals, especially when you actually start thinking about some of the trends that suggest that actually for many young people, certainly a quarter of 25 to 34-year-olds, they're more interested in saving for a holiday than for a deposit on a home. Okay, so who do we turn to? Well, clearly, financial expert from, of course, Raisin, the fabulous Kevin Mountford. How are you, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm good, Alex. Good to speak to you again.
Excellent. Well, we always know we're going to get some sage advice and good thoughts from yourself, but this does seem, I mean, I suppose you could say it's understandable. I mean, live for the today and forget all about tomorrow, but maybe not necessarily the best thing forward in terms of young people getting those first steps onto the property ladder.
Yeah, quite. I mean, I think the Raisin research shows some worrying trends, actually, when it comes to savings. I mean, on one hand, interest rates on savings are the highest they've been for over a decade. But equally, there's been significant rise in borrowing costs. And if you add to that the increased cost of living rise, then clearly for younger people, they either can't afford or, as you just referenced, can't be bothered to save for a house because of the priorities. But the research also showed that something like 30% of adults in the UK are not saving for anything in particular other than a rainy day. So, yeah, there are some worrying trends, particularly in that age group that, generally speaking, would fall into that kind of average first-time buyer category. So, yeah, some worrying trends.
Being aware of the long-term game and the sort of the overall plan, etc., 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, etc., can be a bit challenging. But I mean, again, looking at some of the findings, nearly a third of homeowners say they took up to 3 years to save their deposit. Again, young people, could be three quarters of them taking up to 4 years to actually do so. But it's never really too soon to start saving, is it?
No, it's not. And we often talk about longer term planning, things like pensions, etc. But as far as a property is concerned, it tends to come clearly earlier in life and it's something more tangible around it. But we do need to get into good saving habits. And I said earlier that the interest rates on savings are highest they've been for 10 years. But we still see that lots of people keep the money with the big banks. And we've had 11 consecutive interest rate rises. And typically the big banks are just not passing on the benefits. And that's why platforms like Raisin really come into their own, because we're clearly looking to give value to UK consumers. So, yes, we need to get into good habits. I still, and maybe I'm a little bit old-fashioned, but I believe in kind of jam jar savings. So put your money away for something specific and try and save a little and often. And when you get paid each month, put some away, because typically by the time you get to the end of the month, there's very little left.
I mean, that whole aspect of saving and saving rates, etc., is that something that the government could do anything about in terms of you big high street banks, you're continuing to take all the profits? I mean, it is something which, you, again, from the excellent work you're doing with Raisin, it is a matter of concern to people.
I think there's been a number of considerations around setting standard savings rates, but I would argue in the UK, we have a really competitive market. You're seeing new banks come to the market on a reasonably regular basis. We've got challenger banks, very often are internet only. We've clearly got the building society sector. So I think there's a lot of choice. So what we're looking to do, and again, this is why, you know, Raisin comes into its own, is try and provide content that educates people and a realisation that for regulated banks, their deposits are covered up to £85,000 because of the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. And let's face it, £85,000 pretty much covers the savings for every UK adult. So I think there's a lot of apathy and inertia in the market, and the big banks play into that. So collectively, we've all got to try and educate people. But we are at a point now where I think the interest rates on savings is far more meaningful than it's been for a long, long time. So if you're getting something like, you know, a 1% from a big bank, and yet you can get 4% from lesser-known brands, it clearly is an incentive to switch, particularly if you're having to save up a deposit on a property. And let's face it, you know, that's a challenge in itself, with average prices nearly at £300,000 per property across the UK.
To continue your jam jar analogy, the jam jar could conceivably be half full or half empty, depending on whether you view interest rates as a good or bad thing. Presumably, if you're a saver, in theory, it should be a good thing.
It should. And outside of kind of the older, more affluent customer base, certainly from my knowledge, the second kind of category that tends to save more are young families, because clearly that triggers something that you've got to start thinking further ahead. But what you then get is generally you've got a borrowing commitment, but you've also got a need to save some money. So it's not easy. We all live in kind of busy lives. There's lots of things to focus on. But particularly now as we come into the spring, we think of kind of spring cleaning our property. Let's think about spring cleaning our finances and getting things in order. But the housing market has seen some challenges of late. Prices have softened. And for those that still believe in being homeowners as opposed to renters, then the earlier you can start saving, the better.
Yeah, just on that point, are you seeing any major trends, Kevin, in terms of people wanting to stay as renters, et cetera, almost adopting a more kind of European approach to why would we want to own our home, et cetera? Or is the that kind of traditional notion of having our own property still very much at the heart of many people's ambitions?
Yes, we are seeing, as I say, from the research, an increasing trend in people looking to rent. And let's face it, some people are renting whilst they save for a house, which, again, feels like a challenge. Sometimes, as couples want to buy a property, they kind of want to test before they buy. So they live in rented accommodation before they take the commitment of a mortgage. But we are, I think, generally speaking, a nation of homeowners. I think that's kind of built into us over the years. We are fairly unique, particularly compared to, say, continental Europe. But, you know, we're a small, heavily populated island. So there's a supply and demand situation, which always means the property prices tend to be on the rise over time. So I think for most people, there is good investment opportunity, even if it's your own property, as opposed to a landlord renting one. So I think that is the culture. But certainly going back to the recent research, we are seeing a slight shift now. So and if we think about it, if we do move away from the buying culture, it does have a knock-on effect to the economy. House building, if we think of DIY and all of the ancillary kind of spend around a property, it has a major boost on the UK economy. So let's hope that if that is a trend towards rental, it doesn't continue too long.
Where would be the best place to go to, Kevin, to find out further details about this Raisin research?
Yeah, so if you go to the Raisin platform, which is Raisin, RAISIN.co.uk.
Kevin Manford, financial expert and co-founder of Raisin. Excellent work. Are you getting a holiday yourself this year, Kevin? Or is it a case of no, I'm saving for
I've just actually got back from one, so I need to knuckle down and get some work done now.
Well, I don't know. Some people say once they've had a holiday, they need a holiday to recover from the holiday. So, you know, there's always a way to rationalise things, I would have thought. Anyway, for the moment, Kevin, keep on keeping on and keep on saving.
Thanks very much, Alex. Thanks for having me.